Hey everybody, welcome to Just for Variety. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. On today's episode, I'm talking to Justin Theroux about The Mosquito Coast, Apple TV Plus's new series adaptation of the bestseller of the same name written by the actor's uncle, Paul Theroux. Here, Justin Theroux is talking about taking on the role, an idealist with a seemingly dark past who uproots his family to Mexico, that was originally played by Harrison Ford in a 1985 film adaptation. Theroux also looks back at one of his worst auditions and reveals what he's enjoyed binging during the pandemic. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Surviving. How's it been? How are you surviving? You're doing okay?
I'm doing okay. Yeah. Even doing this is enough of a distraction to make me forget how long I've been indoors and cooped up.
So Mosquito Coast, I think I made a mistake. I watched the whole thing.
Good. That's not a mistake. Unless you didn't want to.
No, it's a mistake in the sense of like to talk to you, I don't want to spoil anything. So I know way too much.
You know too much.
Yeah, exactly. So great. My husband and I watched it. We binged it. I think we did 3 days.
Whoa. Well, that's not too bad of a binge.
Yeah. If we get onto something, we want the whole thing and then we get upset. Because then it's over. But great job. Thanks for leaving us completely like on the edge of our seats, nervous. The tension is just unreal.
Okay.
We just have to talk about Ali. I mean, what? Tell me about his mind. I don't want to say crazy because that might be insulting, but
no,
is he?
We don't know yet. You know, I mean, that's the main reason I wanted to do this so badly because I love that character. You know, he's by turns, both charming at times and infuriating, you know, because, right. You know, there's just times where you love him and there's times where he's very frustrating. And add to that, he's just got a kind of an incredible mind. You know, he's so forward leaning. He's so, intelligent, sharp, all those things. But at the end of the day, you know, his ideology is he's so lashed to it, you know, that it's, you start to realize like, oh, he might be, you know, the wheels might be coming off, you know.
Is he a complete narcissist?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't know what he is. I wouldn't know how to diagnose him. You know, in a weird way, he's an optimist or he's, I don't know. He has trouble seeing other people's point of view, which I guess is a narcissistic trait. Right. But I do think he has empathy for people. You know, enormous empathy, which is not a narcissistic trait. I don't know. I think, you know, he's too smart by half for his own good. You know?
Is he a good parent?
Up for debate. You know, it's, I mean, these are all things that I think honestly are hopefully, if we've done our job correctly, are things that will, are questions that the audience will answer, you know, because Ali thinks he's a good parent. He thinks he's not only a good parent, he's probably the best parent, you know. And arguably there's times throughout our series where he is a good parent. But there's definitely times where you wonder whether this ideology that he's trying to instill in his children is really just to see himself reflected back at himself or whether it's what his family wants or whether it's actually what he wants.
So let's take us back to even beginning this project. Obviously it's based on a novel written by your uncle. Have you been like putting that in your uncle's ear for years going, come on, one day, let's do it?
No, he had his shot when they did the Harrison Ford movie and I was 10 years old and I was ready. I wish I had a better story behind it. It's a pretty pedestrian way of coming to it, which is Paul had already set this up with Fremantle and Apple, and they were going down the normal road of mounting this and casting it. And that's when it popped up on my radar. If anything, I should be angry at Paul for not calling me first. And then I sort of just raised my hand, you know, slightly higher than the rest, I guess. But I knew the character well because it had always sort of been in the periphery of my childhood and throughout my entire life. And I thought that's a character I'd really like to play. So I met with Neil Cross, read the scripts. We totally hit it off. And then I got the job, you know. And so I had the joy of calling up Paul and going like, guess what? I'm going to be doing the Mosquito Coast, playing out. And he was thrilled. I mean, beyond thrilled. I'm very excited.
Was there any hesitation, like mixing family and business? Maybe that next Thanksgiving may not go over well if he doesn't like it.
No. I think if anything, it was the opposite. It was kind of a great comfort, you know, in that knowing that because I was so familiar with it, I felt like I came in sort of slightly ahead of the game. You know, I'd already skipped a couple grades as far as creating the character. And then, of course, he's now seen it and adores it, you know. So, and I don't think he's just being a proud uncle. I think he really genuinely does love it.
Harrison Ford, did you call him, say, hey, you know, there's this role I'm thinking of doing. Would you mind?
No. I mean, look, characters are like, you know, they do it in plays all the time. No one calls someone and says, hey, I know you did Hamlet. Do you mind if I? But I will say, you know, it does cross one's mind to kind of see if they can offer any shortcuts. But I would never have called them. However, we did have a really coincidental, again, I was in Mexico City and he happened to come through for work and stay at the same hotel as me. And we had a mutual friend in common who said, you're both in Mexico City. You should get together and have a bite. So I said, well, by all means, please. And so we had this wonderful, long, sort of lugubrious tequila-filled night over Mexican food, and it was just fabulous. And we did talk about Mosquito Coast, but it wasn't central. He's a much more fascinating man than the guy who just played that part. So we talked about a wide range of things. But,
so you told him you want to play Han Solo.
Exactly.
Were you in
Henry and Witness, exactly?
Were you in Mexico City shooting Mosquito Coast?
Yeah, I was there actively doing it. So it was, I mean, obviously intimidating because I didn't know him, so I didn't know if he was going to be like, oh, you're the guy playing the part that I crushed. You know, like such a fabulous job. You know, but obviously, so I wasn't trying to crib from him or. It was actually hard to kind of forget his performance and put it to the side.
So watching it now, obviously it, when you were shooting it, how long ago did you shoot it? Because what I find fascinating is it just speaks to where we are in this moment in time with the pandemic, with, you know, talking about big corporations and, you know, pharma and capitalism. It just... Ali really is saying a lot that's being said right at this moment.
Yeah. He's one of those characters. I sort of think of him as like almost like an Uber American, but in the vein of like Hemingway or Jack Kerouac or, you know, Jack London or, you know, like he's just one of those go West young man kind of guys, you know, that he's a real sort of frontiersman in a way, you know, but he's also an incredibly sharp wit and intellect and has an abundance of opinions. And I think he speaks to what a lot of us feel or he voices things that a lot of us instinctually think anyway. You know, I don't think it's political. I don't think it's particularly related to any party. I think he's genuinely disenchanted with our country, you know, which is a very American trait. You know, I think virtually every American could complain about something in our country. I think that's universal. But the things that he targets are somewhat altruistic sometimes and sometimes insane, you know.
What did you learn about yourself playing Ali?
I could say what I like about Ali is, and it's not necessarily a trait I have, but I like how, or what I enjoyed about playing him is that he has very little self-doubt. And that if you were to open up his chest and look at his emotional life, it's probably exactly what's reading on his face. You know, so there's not a lot of, he's a pretty clear channel for what he thinks, you know?
Right.
And I really admire that in anyone in life, people that can just have the courage of conviction, which I don't think, which I'm sure I have at times, but I admire it.
So what about some of the violence? Oof, there were times I had to look away.
That seems pretty common these days in television.
Right?
I mean, especially if you're not predisposed to liking that kind of thing. Yeah, I don't think, you know, look, we do it, I think, only at certain very particular moments where violence is necessary. But I'm trying to think of what made you look away.
Butterflies, I'll just say that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, I think it's all intentional, I guess. But actually, very off screen in one respect, you know.
We're going to take a short break from my interview with Thoreau for a peek inside this week's Just for Variety column. Sean Hayes says he may not be officially diagnosed as a hypochondriac, but he certainly feels like one. And now the former Will and Grace star will explore all his health concerns in Hypochondriactor, a new podcast he's co-hosting with doctor and stand-up comedian Priyanka Wally. Launching May 5th, the podcast will include guests discussing their unique medical stories. Hayes jokes that the main reason he created the podcast was for free medical advice. So has your doctor told you you're...
No, I'm undiagnosed, but I'm sure he would joke. He would jokingly say I am too. But I just happen to be an actress, not undiagnosed, have contracts. She just happens to be a stand-up comic who's a doctor, and we married the two and gave birth to a podcast about it. And yes, to answer your question, I'm not diagnosed, but like, yeah, I constantly think about everything that's wrong with my body. I always say, like, to anybody, like, if you want to, you don't have to. I always think it's kind of fun to say, you can literally say any part of my body on the inside or outside, and I name one of those things. I'll probably have a story about it.
Check out more of my interview with Hayes in this week's Just for Variety column in the magazine and available online. Now here's more of the Mosquito co-star, Justin Thoreau.
Season 2.
Who knows? There has to be.
I mean, from your lips to Apple's ears, we'll see. But, you know, as you know, that's a black box I don't get to look into.
I know, but
I can.
I'm telling everyone I want a season 2 because I can't say what happens at the end, but I want to see more.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, it could go in so many different places.
I know. Well, I can tell you we have plans for where it goes. But we have to be given the green light to do that.
And of course, why a series? Why not make a remake of the movie? Why 7 episodes?
It's been kind of proven that shot for shot remakes don't really make much sense. I've never seen one that I particularly love or has been an improvement on the original. So I think in order, and that movie and the book was essentially a period piece at this point, I don't think we wanted to do a period piece or add that to our plate of things we had to execute. And I think Neil correctly, understanding that we in a perfect world would have anywhere from 30 to 40 to 50, 100 hours of television to fill, had to make certain specific changes. The most obvious of which is not a spoiler necessarily, is this fire on their backs that forces them to leave the United States, which is not a part of the book. And in order to explore the characters more and go deeper and richer than perhaps the movie could, we updated, the mother character, for example, in the book, in the movie, was never even had a name, was just called Mother. One of the things we were determined to do is, give her a purpose for existing. So not only that, but also give her some real agency.
So let's talk about your binging. What do you binge? What have you binged? What have you been so-called addicted to?
I've been binging anything that's true crime. I've been really into sort of docuseries. And they all just kind of blur together. But that was the thing that I really treated myself to in the pandemic and then sort of Jones for when I finished them. Just started that QAnon one on HBO. The one sort of scripted thing that I did binge, which I think is maybe one of the most brilliant pieces of television that I've seen in a long time, is Pen 15, that coming of age comedy.
It's so good. It's
just so freaking good. And I don't know why I relate to it so hard. I'm not a preteen girl or anything like that, but there's something so achingly funny and beautiful about that show that I just can't. I actually saw one of the actresses on the street the other day. And I did one of those, I wasn't being creepy or anything, but I mean, I recognized her just through her mask and she was like wearing like this. And I went, like, and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to say something. No, I'm not. I'm going to say something. I am. And then I ended up not saying something, but I was like, it was the first time I'd felt starstruck in a while. So that was kind of fun.
So who was it? The blonde or the brunette?
The blonde.
yeah, that show, I mean, the show is so unique. Because I remember when they had first shown it to me because they actually asked me to moderate a panel with them. And I knew nothing about it. And I knew nothing about it. And I'm watching and I'm like, I mean, talk about a fresh take on a story that's been told a gazillion different ways.
A trillion times. And I was not expecting much either. I was kind of saying, oh, this will be interesting. But I found myself moved. I mean, obviously laughing my face off through huge portions of it, but also so touched by it, you know, like, I don't know. It's just, yeah.
And now take me back to your days starting in the business. Tell me about the most memorable audition you've ever had, or the worst. I like worst auditions, but people usually frame it in memorable.
Memorable worst. I mean, I remember, oh my God. I've had so many horrible auditions. I mean, ones where, you know, particularly before you've ever even worked kind of auditions, you know, those are the worst ones because I'm like, who are you? I don't know. Okay. There's no point of reference for you. One of the worst ones I had was for Thin Red Line, the Terrence Malick war movie. And I remember thinking like, oh, I obviously love Terrence Malick, going like, oh my God. And then it was the classic, like, and there's no script, by the way. And then I was like, oh, okay. So then what's the audition? They're like, well, they'll tell you when you get there. Or assumingly they would give you something that, you know, like whatever. And, you know, when you go to, usually when you go to audition, or at least when I go to an audition now, I meet with the director or and casting director and blah, blah, blah. There's people in the room. But when you're starting out in a career, you kind of get like the casting director's assistant maybe will see you. And there was this woman who was casting it. And, she, you know, it was the classic, like, I was waiting in a hall. It was in, like, a hotel or something. And, sorry.
That's just woke my dog up, by the way. My dog just
What's that?
My dog was like, what?
Maybe that should meet. And so I arrived there to do this audition, and there's no sides, no scene, no lines, no nothing. And I go into the room and the cast nurse is like, okay. And there's like, it's like a room, like with like a couple chairs in. She's like, okay, just like get behind a chair and pretend like you're in a foxhole or something, like smoking a cigarette. And she's like, and I'm like, and they're filming it. And you're like, what? And they're like, just like get behind the chair and pretend like you're in a battle. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do? So, you know, you sort of tipped over a chair and I was like, you just want me to just like pretend like, and so there I am kind of going like, but I don't know what war we're fighting. I don't even know what the movie is. I know it's a war movie. That's all I know. And so I'm sitting there pretending to like pull pins out of a grenade and, you know, charge and all that. And I'm like, what is the stupid, you know what I mean? It's like telling a painter to paint a house without giving them brushes, you know, like just put paint around. I don't know. We don't need brushes. Like, you know, it's like, I need words to say. So that was a particular humiliation.
I have to tell you, most of the people I talk to, when I ask this question, it comes down to one of the same type of audition where it's like, just do this. There's no props. There's nothing.
There's,
yeah.
And you're sitting in a room and you're like, you just have to.
Yeah. It's like, we're not magicians. You know what I mean? Exactly. So, okay. So you want me to write, direct, and act this all on the spot without any information about who the person is, what I'm supposed to be doing. I mean, it was just like, I don't know. And I got the job. No, I didn't get the job. Of course I didn't get the fucking job.
It'd be a different story if you got the job.
Yeah, totally. I know. I could be Jim Caviezel.
When are you going to dip back into the superhero world? You know, you did that on Iron Man too.
That was like such a, you know, lucky job. I mean, I just finished working with Robert on Tropic Thunder, and then I somehow got in the room with Marvel, and I don't know if I will. I mean, you know, who knows? I don't know.
Are you one of those Marvel fanatics? Are you a DC fanatic?
I'm not a fanatic. I love everything that Marvel does, though. I think those guys are very, very smart. And I loved what they did. You know, frankly, the way they sort of reverse engineered Iron Man into the Avengers, I thought was one of the greatest
things of all time. You have to check out WandaVision.
I know, I'm dying to. I love Paul.
He's so good.
He's
so good in it. It's a side of Paul that we haven't seen. It's genius.
Oh, good.
So Justin, it's always good seeing you. Hopefully the next time we see each other in person, congrats on the show.
Right, I know. Where are you? Are you in LA somewhere?
I'm in LA, you know.
How are you doing? Good?
I'm double vaccinated.
Oh, congrats.
Yeah. I know, that's what everyone keeps saying. It's so weird.
God.
You know, and it's strange because you're told this whole year this invisible virus is out there. But now, yes, I'm still wearing masks. I'm still being safe. But I'm like, are we real? Like this shot, these two shots have made it safe. And
yes, you know,
LA is moving us fast. You know, they're thinking of movie theaters at 50% already.
They're doing the same in New York. I'm not putting my butt in one yet.
I'm not going anywhere near a movie theater.
Yeah.
Not now.
Also the weather's awesome. I just want to be out there.
I know. I'm a native New Yorker, but I've been in LA now 20 years and
yeah.
I don't miss winter.
That was Justin Theroux. The Mosquito Coast premieres on Apple TV Plus on April 30th. Thanks for listening to this week's Just for Variety. Coming up next week, Michael B. Jordan. The actor will be here to talk about his new action film, Without Remorse. Until then, don't forget to follow me on Twitter and Instagram, @MarkMalkin. For all the latest in Hollywood news, head over to Variety.com. And remember, keep wearing your masks. See you soon.